We're getting up to speed on the impeachment inquiry into President Trump here on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cherkin. Thanks for being here. We're looking at the work of House committees and subpoenas, including the president's private lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. President Trump made a racially loaded reference on Twitter this week, calling the inquiry a lynching, and he gave a combative briefing to reporters at the White House.
I think they want to impeach me because it's the only way they're going to win. They've got nothing. All they have is a phone call that was perfect. All they have is a whistleblower who's disappeared. Where is he? He's gone.
How do you feel about private depositions unfolding behind closed doors? Do you want public hearings on the president's dealings with Ukraine? We're at 800-642-1234. Kim Whaley is a law professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, where she teaches and writes on the constitutional separation of powers, administrative law, and civil procedure. She's a legal analyst for CBS News, and her new book is called How to Read the Constitution and Why. Kim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Untangle for us, if you will, how government attorneys are not like the kind of lawyers in private practice whose job basically it is to defend their clients' best interests.
Yeah, so I've been in and out of government in my practice as well as teaching. And for government lawyers, the question is, what do we do that is best for the United States of America as a whole? So inside the Justice Department, when I was there, and then we have to make a decision about whether to file a certain brief in a case, for example, the question wasn't just how do we win this at all costs, which I think when I say at all costs, so long as it's within the boundaries of ethics and the law, that's kind of the posture that is taken in private practice for lawyers. The objective is to get what the outcome the client wants. For government lawyers, it's different. It's if we file this motion, if we win this case, what does that mean for the rule of law? What does that mean for the next case and the next case? How will that affect policy for Americans? It's very, very different. Government lawyers understand their client is the public, the American public, not any particular person in office in any given time, because those people change with each administration.
And help us understand a little bit, if you will, the work of the Justice Department and guidelines that prevent even federal prosecutors from charging a sitting president with a crime. Because, you know, outside of the impeachment inquiry, we have a Manhattan district attorney pursuing President Trump's tax returns. And that is in office enforcing state laws, but not bound by Justice Department guidelines.
Yes, great question. So we, of course, have two systems. There's a federal system that is headed, the criminal justice system that's headed ultimately by the President of the United States under Attorney General Barr. Then we have state U.S. attorneys or U.S. District attorneys that implement state law, state criminal law. And then within the Justice Department, we're hearing a lot, for example, about the Southern District of New York. Those are federal prosecutors. They all answer to the president. So we have the federal system. We have the state system. Under the federal system, there is an internal guidance document that was produced essentially during the Whitewater investigation or after that, where I worked on that, by President Clinton's Justice Department. And the question President Clinton gave to his Justice Department is, listen, as a matter of policy, is it constitutional for the Justice Department to prosecute sitting presidents? And that Justice Department came up with an internal memo that said, no, we believe it's not constitutional. That's not a law. It's not in a statute. It's not in the Constitution. It's essentially kind of like a part of their personnel manual. These are the kinds of cases that we are going to allow our prosecutors to prosecute. So within the Justice Department, the current Attorney General could amend that memo any day, change the internal policy for prosecutors in the government, in the federal government, and open investigations and prosecutions into the president. At the state level, because they are individual sovereign states, they're not bound by that internal policy for DOJ prosecutors. And so we are seeing, the New York State attorney general make different decisions regarding potentially how that criminal process is unfolding, because they're not bound by that internal decision. Now, if that question ever went to the United States Supreme Court and we had a court ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court that, say, a sitting president could be indicted or could not be indicted, that would bind the entire United States. But prior to that, the law is open. The law is not settled in that regard.
We're talking with Kim Whaley. She's a law professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law. You can join in. We're talking about the role of attorneys in government and the impeachment inquiry. Have you ever been subpoenaed in a case? Did you follow the request? Are you a judge? How important is it for witnesses to fulfill a subpoena request? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Kim, yesterday, longtime U.S. diplomat William Taylor testified he served as ambassador to Ukraine. And we have since learned that Taylor told lawmakers that President Trump orchestrated a parallel foreign policy for Ukraine. There's this 15-page written testimony and then his hours of answers that are not publicly known behind closed doors. So how does the written document work with oral statements, and how then did it get leaked to the media outlets, or, you know, in the hands of the media?
I mean, I believe that was something, and I could be wrong on this, that the witness himself made public.
Okay.
Even grand jury witnesses aren't bound by any secrecy themselves. They're allowed to talk to outside people if they choose to. It's important to keep in mind here, as I mentioned, I worked on the Whitewater investigation, and I know there's a lot of questions about whether House Democrats are being fair to the president, are following procedures that are fair and open and transparent. In Whitewater, Ken Starr operated with a grand jury. A grand jury in the criminal justice process is secret. If you are a target of a grand jury investigation that could produce an indictment that could ultimately put you in jail, you don't get to go into the grand jury. You don't get to have your lawyers cross-examine grand jury witnesses. You don't get to know who else the prosecutors are being subpoenaing or asking to testify before the grand jury. All of that is in secret, and it can produce, you could lose your liberty as a subject. Here we've got a president who could lose his job, so the stakes, frankly, for him personally are lower. Because we don't have a special prosecutor or an independent counsel doing the investigative spade work on Ukraine, and like Ken Starr did, and giving all those facts to Congress, Congress is having to act like prosecutors in the first place. That's why this is done in a kind of methodical, quiet, behind-the-scenes way, so they can get the facts out. And then presumably there will be public hearings on their findings. There certainly would be for a trial in the Senate. But they're having to do the work of gathering the facts in a methodical way that allows them to unfold ultimately for the American people. So that's a really important distinction here.
And on a timeline that originally had been really short timeline, and now we're hearing that this process could take quite a while.
Well, think about it. I mean, the Starr investigation was 6 or 7 years. Robert Mueller's investigation with a team of professional prosecutors was 18 months. This is, you know, as you kind of pull the thread of the sweater with respect to Ukraine, presumably, like any good investigator, they're going to find more people they need to talk to, more documents they need to look at. If this is done properly and fairly to the president, frankly, it should take a long time because it's a complicated, I mean, the basic scenario is clear, but the levels of potential involvement by people in and out of the government could take some time to unravel and to understand.
We're talking with University of Baltimore law professor Kim Whaley as we look at the legal process of the impeachment inquiry. Do you believe President Trump's phone call with the Ukraine president is an impeachable offense, or do you disagree with this inquiry? What are your thoughts? What questions do you have about the Justice Department's role in this? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Uh-huh. House Republicans have heavily criticized the way Democrats are going about this impeachment inquiry into President Trump. We're getting an update on the investigation, the closed-door depositions, the subpoenas. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This week, Republicans' efforts to censure House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff for his handling of the inquiry, that failed. President Trump is calling this inquiry illegitimate because the House did not formally vote to authorize one. So what do you make of the proceedings? What questions do you have about the role of the Justice Department and the role of the president's private attorneys? We're at 800-642-1234. University of Baltimore law professor Kim Whaley stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Willem joining us from Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Good morning. A vote in the House is not required for this impeachment, so that is a false argument by the president. And frankly, I don't see how any person could possibly give the president any credibility. I think the New York Times is up to, I don't know, you know, how many untruths the president has spoken. He lies as easily as he breathes. And his statement about this impeachment process being like a lynching is one of the most offensive things I've ever heard a U.S. president say. I'm 68 years old. I don't think I've ever heard a president make a comment like that. It's all about him, like everything is always about him. But it's not illegal, and no person is above the law, not even the president of the United States. Because if you put the president of the United States above the law, or like some people assert, that, like Nixon said, that if the president does it, it can't be illegal. What's the difference between that and the divine right of kings?
Well, Willem, I'm going to jump in here, and Willem has certainly been keeping close tabs on this. But, you know, he's saying that he doesn't feel the president's due process rights have been violated, Kim.
Yeah, I mean, Willem makes a lot of, I think, really important macro points about this. I talk about this in the book. This isn't so much about President Trump himself. It's about the office of the presidency. If we allow the belts and suspenders of the office of the presidency to expand to the point where there's no oversight, which is essentially this president's point of view, his White House counsel's point of view, then impeachment itself is improper, which of course it isn't. It's in the Constitution. Then regardless of political parties, we're in an environment where we have whoever's in that office can do what they want, regardless of the law, regardless of the limits. And the framers of the Constitution understood that when that happens, regular people get hurt. And the office itself has to stay accountable for individual rights in this country to be protected, to avoid arbitrary decision-making by government officials against regular people. So the stakes, regardless of where you are in the political spectrum, the stakes for the integrity of our democracy, for our children who can't vote in November 2020, some of them, are absolutely, could not be higher in my view as a scholar.
Let's bring in Katrina now in Grand Chute. Hi, Katrina.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a strong protest against the so-called inquiry, which is basically a fishing expedition. Our president was elected, and the Democrats are trying to bring him down by slander and innuendo, and nothing. Their facts are not there. And every person in the United States has the right to face their accuser.
So, Katrina, you feel that the whistleblower should be revealed. Kim Whaley, go ahead.
Okay, a couple things. One is the president, if this goes to trial in the Senate, he will have the opportunity through his lawyers to confront whatever witnesses are going to testify. So that's the phase where, even if I can make an argument due process doesn't technically apply, but to the extent to which he gets the right to face accusers, it will be in a Senate trial, and Mitch McConnell has indicated he'll go forward with that. So he will get his fair process. With respect to the whistleblower personally, The whistleblower statute is preceded the Constitution itself. It's as old as the hills when it comes to sort of American law. And the idea is that if people inside government can let us know, the rest of us know a potential wrongdoing, we can keep government honest. And that goes across political parties. At this point, the whistleblower, him or herself, is irrelevant. The question is firsthand knowledge of what happened. And I understand Katrina's frustration and concern with the process. But here we do have the president's own statements in the summary of the phone call. We have his chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, publicly conceding some critical facts. We have lifelong diplomats that have worked under Democratic and Republican presidents confirming the basic facts. So the question really isn't what happened. The question is what should be done about what happened, if anything. And that's a political judgment for the Congress.
Talking with Kim Whaley, a law professor at the University of Baltimore, we're looking at the impeachment inquiry and how the testimonies work before House panels. Kim, we were talking recently with Democratic Representative Ron Kind of Wisconsin, and Republicans have complained about having limited access to these closed-door testimonies. And here is Congressman Kind talking about this on our show.
I think it's appropriate because as a former special prosecutor, you do want to interview these witnesses in isolation so that other witnesses can't coordinate their stories.
What do you make of that? Having these testimonies in isolation so other witnesses can't coordinate their stories.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, best practices for investigators and prosecutors. Imagine the alternative scenario. We saw it, for example, with the confirmation process of Brett Kavanaugh, where you have public sort of testimony with the news media, with members of Congress making sort of political speeches potentially in their questions. And it's really difficult for the witness to get the facts out and for there to be a measured, thoughtful judgment. This is a grave decision. This is really important for the American populace and for the future of democracy, for this to be done right. And as I said, best practices for an investigation, which is what Congress is doing right now, is to keep these things quiet and behind closed doors. That's what happens in the grand jury. If you're called to testify in the grand jury, you cannot bring your lawyer into the grand jury. So it's a bit awkward because we have Congress doing it. But in terms of how to get the fairest record for a potential trial in the Senate, I agree with the congressman that this is best practices.
Well, let's back up a day or so as Republicans failed to force a vote on the House floor that would have censured House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff for his handling of the impeachment inquiry. Explain what that was about and what happened there.
Well, I mean, you know, I think that's less of concern sort of in the overall process. My understanding, it was a political judgment that Adam Schiff has kind of reframed some of the evidence in ways that wasn't arguably to some people entirely accurate. But again, the eye that we should have is on the ball of what the witnesses are actually saying and what the Congress decides to do with the information that it gathers. There is no constitutional requirement to actually have a vote to start the process. Andrew Johnson, there was no vote to start the process. I know there's an argument that there was one with Ken Starr and there was one with Jaworski. But again, those are different times. And as we saw with, for example, the nomination of Merrick Garland to the United States Supreme Court under Obama, the Senate, Mitch McConnell, refused to even bring that nominee to the floor. And I say that because whoever's in power in Congress has the authority to set the rules for how they proceed. And that's what's happening in the House right now.
How is completing this investigation, bear into our Constitution and the backbone of what we are here in the U.S.?
Okay, so imagine, and a prior caller mentioned sort of a monarchy. the framers and the revolutionaries did not want a monarchy anymore. They didn't want a king who could basically come into their house with a general warrant and rifle through their stuff for absolutely no reason. And so the idea was, we'll set up a structure, we'll set up a job description to make sure that whoever gets power is checked by someone else, that nobody gets ultimate power. So they broke the monarchy into three parts: the judicial branch, the executive branch, and the legislative branch. And the structure assumes that every branch gets their papers graded by the other two branches. You mentioned earlier the DOJ internal guidance saying you can't indict a sitting president. So imagine that a president sort of orders the murder of, and this obviously this isn't happening, but imagine the president orders the murder of every third person walking down the street in Milwaukee. That would be a problem, to have a president with that kind of power or exercising that kind of power. Under DOJ guidelines, couldn't prosecute that person federally. It has to go to Congress. If Congress doesn't exercise some oversight power, then we have a presidency, an office that can do whatever it wants. And that's really bad for the American people. The next president, even if you support this president, you might not support the next president, and you'd want limits on that person's power. And that's why this inquiry is so critical. Regardless of whether he gets impeached and removed from office or gets reelected, it's absolutely vital that Congress protect its prerogative of oversight.
Kim, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Kim Whaley is a law professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Her latest book is called How to Read the Constitution and Why. Coming up, vampires, zombies, and werewolves in our midst, and we look at age-old monster myths and what they have to do with science. That's right after this news update here on the Ideas Network.